Welcome to Service and Wealth, the podcast dedicated to helping military personnel master their finances and achieve financial freedom. Our mission is to guide you through the ins and outs of planning, saving, and investing, and most importantly, how to balance savings so you can enjoy life now and retire with confidence. All right. Hey, welcome back. It's a special day here on the Service and Wealth podcast, not because of my guest. Okay, I'm kidding. It is special, especially for me, for the guest I'm about to introduce, but it's also special because we're recording it live on November 10th, the year 2025, which means today is the 250th birthday of the Marine Corps, the world's most elite fighting force ever. I've heard Navy SEALs kind of like tout their accomplishments, or like Delta and like some of these other guys, they even, you know, they call themselves like tier one operators, but like nobody can even come close to the Marine Corps. And I think it's just as much the birthday ball that we have itself. Like nobody's ever gone to a SEAL's birthday ball. So to all the Marines out there tuning in, happy birthday, Marines, Semper Fi. You know, I miss it. I gotta say that much. I hope you all are safe and doing well today. And with that said, you know, let's just get into it because our guest today is a Marine. We've got Marine Gunnery Sergeant Chris Esparza, another one of my former colleagues through the Naval Academy and training young Marines in California and doing a whole bunch of cool stuff together. And so the reason why, you know, Chris is on is because he's also getting close to retirement, and we're going to go into that a little bit. And, you know, Chris has, he's married, he's got a family, he's got two daughters. One is, I believe she's just headed off to college, and the other's in high school. And so today we're going to talk about a lot of things, but I think we're going to get some really good content and perspectives from him on like balancing all this stuff, right? You know, like a lot of us in the audience, we might be thinking right now about just retirement, or we might be thinking about, you know, starting a family and how much a kid is going to cost. And he's got all of this experience that he's going to be able to share with us. So without any further ado, he's coming live from... Where are you, Chris? Are you in Temecula right now? Is that right?
Pretty close. Murrieta. So 45 minutes from Camp Pendleton.
All right. Murrieta. So, well, welcome, Chris. That was a really short introduction by me. Is there anything else that you'd like to share, let the audience know about you and your career as a Marine, or who you are just as a person?
You know, not much. Good morning to everyone, to all the service members. Happy birthday to the Marines. Again, this is for everyone serving in the Department of War. I'm excited to be here. I've learned a lot, and I still got a lot of learning to do, but just on here to kind of share my knowledge and to gain more knowledge. So,
well, yeah, and really that's what it's all about. You know, I think back to when I was a young officer and there was a gunny who told me, he's like, sir, the only way that you can call today a success is if you teach somebody one thing and you learn one thing. And that's how we get better every day. And so that's really what the channel is all about. And so it's cool to hear you bring that and be ready to share your experiences. Now, I got to ask, did you have a birthday ball this weekend?
No, not yet. I have one here in the next 2 weeks. So usually, you know, here in Camp Pendleton, there's just so many units that there's balls going from like October through pretty much like early December. So this is still waiting.
So you guys have,
but you know what? It's kind of, you know, this last one is kind of unfortunate just because my wife, you know, 2 weeks ago, she departed to Alabama for OTS, which is, you know, officer training school for the Air Force. She's a reservist, and, you know, she did a direct commission, you know, so we try to prolong that as long as we could, but, you know, she finally left. So she's in Alabama right now, but she's having a good time. Little did I know is they have their phones on them, you know, so I was like expecting OCS. You know, they were going to get, you know, beat down. And no, she's like texting me and calling me, and I'm like, wait a minute. It's different, you know, but hey, shout out to the Air Force as well.
Yeah, no, that's great. Well, congratulations, I guess, on the fact that she's followed through with that, and also that she managed to like kind of like hide from it for so long, you know,
yeah.
Just kind of like, but it is funny, you know, I get things over here on social media feeds about the Royal Air Force, and they're the same kind of jokes that we make about the Air Force in the United States. You know, they're like, hey, Air Force, your new medal is here, 14 consecutive days without air conditioning or something like that. So it's a universal joke.
No, yeah, they get
well.
Yeah.
So she's making that transition, and then, like, what's your countdown to your retirement date?
You know, God willing, I'm looking at April. You know, so a few months from now. You know, no later than May. I'm looking at the full transition. You know, with the leave days that I have back. You know, that I have collected, and just the way that I'm planning everything. You know, so hopefully here in April I can start fully transitioning into the next chapter in life. You know, but the last 3 years, just trying to come up with the ideas of, you know, what I wanted to do. And a lot of them, you know, kind of, you know, it flipped. I really thought, you know, a few years ago, I was going to, you know, kind of transition into keeping my foot in the door in the Marine Corps and going JROTC at a high school. You know, I found what I love to do was, you know, being an instructor at the Naval Academy, mentoring, guiding, coaching, you know, young men and women. So I thought I was going to do that in the high school level. But, you know, but here in the last year, just change of heart. And I want to pursue, you know, entrepreneurship. I want to, you know, small businesses and just do something that I've never had the opportunity to do. You know, just continue to challenge myself. And, you know, the JROTC is a great gig, a great job, but you still have your foot in the door. And I think it was time for me just to completely detach from the Marine Corps. So I love it. I love what I've done in the past 19 and a half years. It's everything I've ever wanted to do since age 3. You know, I mean, my father, he was a Marine. He was a reserves. I got his patch here, but he was an artilleryman, you know, mm-hmm. in Los Angeles, you know, during the Vietnam era. He went to Vietnam. I mean, from age 3, I remember my bed, you know, on the side, I had those old school Marine Corps posters, and I knew the Marine Corps him at age 3, you know. So finally my dream it's happened, you know, but it's time to come to a close, you know. But I'm super excited. And I feel like the stars are aligning for what's to come.
Well, I appreciate you sharing that, because I think there's a lot of wisdom in that, which is you kind of get to go on a high note. And, you know, if you tried to stick around and maybe it wasn't like natural, you might not have the same kind of positive feelings about the experience, you know, dragging on. And I feel like you see that a lot with some of the older contractors who get out and come straight back to work at a MEF headquarters. And like after a few years, they're just like, this is not fun. You know, and it can kind of ruin their memory of the Marine Corps. So, yeah. And then also, obviously, I know you for several years now, and you've always had that entrepreneurial spirit. So the fact that you're pursuing that is also really neat. Before we get into that, I kind of wanted to go, like, you know, the classic Marine Corps-ism or planning-ism, where you go big to small. So when you're looking at 6 to 8 to 10 months from now, what are sort of like the wave tops, like the big things on your mind, whether that's like things you're questions you're trying to ask or like stresses you have?
You know, that's a great question. I would say, you know, it is, you know, for me, is there anything that is really, you know, that I'm nervous about that I still have, you know, questions regarding? You know, I'm still going through the retirement process, you know, so that's mm-hmm. complicated in itself, you know. You know, but at the end of the day, I know that it's going to get accomplished. You know, the VA, whatever I'm entitled to, the VA, the medical, you know, I still got to go to TRS. That's a 1 week course, you know, transitioning out. Honestly, I am confident, you know, but again, it's just for the past year, it's just, I've been really putting a lot of work into already prepping myself for the retirement. You know, it's just one of those things that I'm just blessed, you know, and the way that I speak, I always go back and tell like little stories, you know, but I dropped out of high school in the 10th grade. Troubled youth, you know, with the law, which is kind of crazy because my father, he was LAPD, you know, for 39 years, you know, just, he was in Los Angeles, I was in Idaho, you know, we moved, my mom. So, you know, I didn't have the father figure there present, you know, so that's why I got in trouble with the law, you know, dropped out, got my GED, you know, but the one thing that I always wanted to be a Marine in some way, somehow, you know, I slid under the crack and, I'm still here. You know what I mean? Thank the OIF, OEF era, right? Everyone, you know, no one wanted to join. Yeah. And, you know, I was one of the ones like, hey, I walked in the recruiter's office. You know, it's leading up to where I am now. You know, I don't know if, you know, I know it's blessed, but it's also been some luck. You know, aligning everything, you know, looking forward to, you know, the day where I do officially retire, which is August, right? August of 2026, because I came in August. So yes, I plan on getting out April, May. but my time officially starts in August. So I still got those few months of buffer, you know, of getting paid and for everything to kind of catch up to that time. But, you know, it's a good feeling, the reassurance knowing that I really don't need to focus and dread and, you know, being impatient for that income to hit, right? Just based on the choices that I have made leading up to this. So, but right now, I mean, I would say the big stressor is still, you know, doing the whole, on the outside of the Marine Corps, there's no big concern, but in the Marine Corps, it's still the transitioning process of, you know, the paperwork and everything that I got to do.
Right, right. And there are a couple of decisions that it seems really strange, but you get to make that decision up until the day that you get your DD-214. And then like, as soon as they give you that paperwork, you don't get to make the decision, even though it's the one example I'm thinking of is like the thrift savings plan. You know, there's certain things that shut off that from the day prior to the day after. So we'll definitely come back to talk about thrift savings plan. I know we'll talk about that a bit today, but I'm also curious for you talked there a couple of times. You said, you know, having this buffer and not like kind of stressing. And so, you know, I'm aware of some of the investments that you've made over the years with real estate and other things. Do you want to share some of those investments you have and talk about how those are going to help you with the transition and help you with your retirement planning and all that?
No, absolutely. You know, to a lot of the service members, you know, to my Marines especially, I always tell them, you know, before anything, your biggest investment, and this is my opinion, but your biggest, and I'm looking at my wife right now, but your biggest investment is, you know, your spouse, wherever she or he is. My wife has a great career and, you know, she has a great mindset. I'm very impulsive at times. She's the one that kind of keeps me calm, cool. Hey, sleep on it, you know, and sometimes she gets a little frustrated with my decisions, but, you know, my wife, she has real, you know, she's, we make a great team, you know, and we've been each other's biggest investment, you know, so I'm absolutely blessed with that. But, you know, we have our primary home here in Marietta, and then we also have an investment property here that we bought back in 2011. And, you know, it has been a rental for the past, I would say, 14 years. So we bought it back when it was $210,000. Now that house is worth like $700,000, you know, so it's just a big blessing. When we're talking about passive income, I mean, it's been huge. Just maintain, we manage that property ourselves. You know, it's 5 minutes down the road from us, so it's very manageable. And then our second rental property is actually in our hometown of Nampa, Idaho. You know, we bought that home back in 2018. You know, for I believe it was like $252,000. Now it's like anywhere in the $400,000 to $450,000 range, and we've been renting that one now since 2020. You know, there's never been a time where it's been vacant for more than 2 weeks. You know, and that one, you know, we do have property managers, but when I retired, that's something that, you know, that we've talked about is doing it ourselves. You know, because now that we have a little bit of experience, I think we can manage. So just with those two homes, it's been very helpful, you know, with, you know, a little bit more comfort. And then you can go, you know, I've also, you know, we've also made mistakes. You know, one of my biggest mistakes, and this I will blame it on my wife, you know, and she knows it took her three years to finally say, hey, I was wrong, you know. But one of the biggest mistakes was not buying a house in Annapolis. You know, when we showed up to Annapolis, it was 2020. We moved into base housing, and it was very tiny. We were cramped, and I found this beautiful home right there by the golf course in that neighborhood back there behind the next gorgeous home, you know, for $430,000. We went to go look at it, you know. I think I caught my wife at the wrong time, right after a long 12-hour shift at the hospital, and she just, you know, she didn't like it, you know. But man, I saw the value in that home, you know, the location, just the rental market there, you know, being so close to the little clinic, the next, the PX, the golf course, the academy, kind of, you know, on a 1 acre lot. Anyways, you know, we put in an offer for $431,000. That was it, you know, really my, you know, just because my wife didn't want, her heart wasn't in it. So long story short, they sold the house for like $434,000. So we lost bid. That home now is $746,000, you know, and I'm just like, man, you know, it's that missed opportunity. But, you know, those are the ones that I keep thinking about. But the ones that we have made, you know, we just been blessed, you know. Also, you know, I got into which is not really a retirement plan, you know, but you know, just holding on to my my crypto, you know, as long as I can. I don't need it. It's just there. So whenever I do wake up and decide to like, hey, today's the day, you know, but I have like a five, you know, I've had it for 5 years. So I plan on holding it for another 5 years there. But yeah, just little things here and there that, you know, we've been kind of just getting ready, you know, just it's a nice security to have.
Well, that's definitely true. And when you look back at these investments that you did make, whether it was the real estate 10 or 15 years ago or crypto a few years ago, when you bought these things, what was your plan? Were you like, we're going to have it for maybe a couple of years? Or were you like, this is going to be an investment that we hold for 5, 10, 15 years?
The, you know, our first home, which holds a special place in our heart, we got orders to Okinawa, Japan. You know, we bought the house in 2011. When we got orders, it was like 2015. When we left, it was 2016. So, you know, the house jumped significant, you know, in value. At that time, probably, I think like $150,000. Hey, seeing that price, I told my wife, hey, let's sell it. You know, I was young. I wasn't too familiar with the whole, you know, property managers and, you know, having a rental. So I was looking for the easy way out. You know, speaking to a lot of my buddies, they made that choice, you know, where they saw that pig, you know, that pot of gold, you know, and they sold their home. They sold their condo down at Point Loma, you know, back in 2015 and 16, and they absolutely regret it, you know. But I was like, hey, babe, let's sell this home. And she was the one that kind of was like, hey, time out. I love this home. We're going to rent it out, you know. So that was it. Before we bought the home, we were living in Santa Ana in an apartment. You know, it was pretty expensive and, you know, the commute was there. And I really knew nothing about the VA loan until one of my buddies told me about it. And honestly, I didn't really do any research. All I did was I contacted a real estate agent, and they're the ones that kind of, you know, again, I was 22 years old. I was 22 years old when we bought our first home. You know, just I was stationed at the School of Infantry as permanent personnel. So I was always busy, you know. I mean, this is when I was in my prime. I was a, you know, corporal about to be a sergeant, you know. Just I already had Iraq under my belt, Afghanistan. Now I'm SOI. I just got orders to DI schools. It was just a bit. I had no time to think of any investment. Everything I've done, you know, so far, you know, early in my career, it was just kind of just going with your gut instinct and just kind of a quick Google search and, you know, people kind of helping me. You know, it's been one of those things, like, and that's how we got our first home, you know, with the VA loan. Is I didn't know nothing until I was just following instructions from the real estate agent. I saw, you know, his name is Marcel. I haven't, you know, we lost contact, but I still remember the name, you know, because he helped me out tremendously. But I remember being in the 7-ton on the side of the road in Camp Pendleton, you know, calling, you know, for the VA eligibility letter, you know, being on the phone for like an hour. I remember being on the phone for another hour with USAA trying to get that home loan. Just going through the box, right? What to do. So that was the first one. The second one, you know, my wife, she's a reservist. So the way that we bought hers was through her VA entitlement. And the thought process for that one is during that time, we didn't know if we were going to retire in California or Idaho, right? Our heart was kind of in both places. We were split, you know, but we decided to buy a home there and just to hold it and see what would happen. You know, fast forward from the year that we bought it back in 2018 to now, you know, that was a great decision. But at the time, you know, I was kind of nervous because that home that we bought in Idaho 4 years prior would have been $150,000. You know, we bought it for $252,000. So, but again, you know, just look at that time, we were just looking at our, you know, our entitlements. And at that point, we're thinking about the bigger picture, you know, and that's the reason why we bought that. And then, you know, when it came to crypto, I was in stocks for a few years, for like 2 years. I was heavy in Disney, Ford, and Alibaba. And, you know, pretty much at that time, that was pretty much my savings. I pulled everything out and I invested into the stock market, and I was doing pretty well. Alibaba, I mean, it shot up to like $300 and something a share. I bought it at like $160. I had a bunch of shares. Disney, you know, I bought it at like $100. It was at the, like the, at its peak, like at $202. Ford, You know, I mean, it got up to $26. You know, I bought at the time, it was like $3. And again, I was trying to stick it out for the long term. In my head, I'm like, oh, Alibaba's going to surpass Amazon. You know, I'm looking at Amazon price and I'm comparing Ford to Toyota's like $40 a share. And I'm just like, man, you know, I'm going to hold off, which was a biggest mistake, right? I kind of held off. And then that's when the market started kind of, like, you know, coming down a little bit. I still sold at a profitable margin, but that was my story. So when I started dropping, I pulled it all out. You know, it was one of those, you know, I've been looking at Bitcoin for years. I just didn't understand it. And in one night, I just said, hey, this might be the future. You know, I was looking at, I had a dollar bill and I looked at it and it's like, you know, a very old, crumpled, you know, it's probably been circulated through thousands of people. And I'm like, man, you know, how long is this bill going to last? You know, how long is it going to last like this? You know, people exchanging currency. I went all in, you know, everything that I sold from the stock market. And I even went back into our savings account and I pulled it all. And then, you know, I bought Bitcoin. That I really had no idea really what, you know, it was just that gut feeling, that instinct of like, hey, I believe in what the future might hold, right? You know, like this is going to be the internet's gold. And I remember a year and a half later, 2 years later, Bitcoin went down to, I bought at 42,000. I remember I saw Bitcoin drop to 17,000 bucks, you know, and I looked at my wife and I was like, I think I made the biggest mistake probably ever, you know, but again, I stayed strong. I didn't panic. I knew I had a plan of holding it for 10 years. So I didn't even look at it for years. I didn't look at it. I put it to the side and I saw it come back up and I'm like, all right, I'm back where I started. No big deal. And then, you know, last year I was on deployment. I was on the USS Voxer and, you know, I got on the internet real quick and I saw that Bitcoin jumped to like 57,000. I'm like, wow, you know, cool. You know, I made 10,000 bucks in the last, five years. And then from there, it happened in a matter of like 3 weeks, you know, 57, 64, you know, 72, you know, at this point, my heart's kind of racing and I'm like, wow, you know, and then when it's in the 80s and 90s, I was like, what? I remember just going on the top of the ship and I was just like looking at the ocean, kind of like with my hands up, like, I did it. You know, I'm the smartest man alive. you know, and so it you know, and it's more like a hobby. You know, I really, again, to me, I look at Bitcoin as make-believe money. A lot of people call it that, you know, but I know my investment, you know, but the reason I call it make-believe, it's because I really don't need that money. That money is there. I don't touch it. If I lose it, that is on me, right? But I believe in that. I trust in it. So whenever that time comes where I need to pull that out or invest it in somewhere else, into potentially my future business, you know, if the time comes, it's there. You know, I saw it go to 126,000. I was like, man, there's no stopping it. You know, and then it came back down to 98. I went on Facebook and I told everyone, I'm like, hey, Bitcoin's on sale, you know, and you know, now it's at 106,000. You know, so it's just watching the market, but. Yeah, you know, my investments have started kind of not knowing, you know, but everything just kind of came about, you know, the right way. I know it doesn't happen like that to a lot of people when they invest, but now I kind of see the bigger picture and I'm looking at my different pots, you know, here and there, but it's been pretty blessed.
Well, I certainly agree with that. And you could probably give yourself a little bit of a pat on the back for having some good instincts and trusting yourself, which is, you know, it's not all luck, right? You know, there are people who are going to be on the luck. You know, they might not have that vision of the long term. They might not have had the ability to say what really importantly at the end you did, which is like, I don't need this money, you know? And that's, I think, one of the big mistakes young investors make is they will take a little bit too much, invest it, and maybe they don't have like an emergency savings fund. And so then suddenly when something comes up that they need, you know, $5,000 or $10,000 for like refixing a car or getting a new car, they've got to sell those investments. And if you don't have that mindset you just talked about, which is I'm putting this money away and I'm not going to touch it for 10 years. I mean, look at what your houses did, right? Or even, you know, Bitcoin just in the last, I guess, what has been maybe like 18, 24 months that tripled in price. But if you had to sell it because you didn't have that cash available or just a full plan, you know, you're talking about real estate, crypto, stocks, etc. you're going to miss out on all those opportunities. And so the one thing, you know, I wanted to add with that to something else that you said about being, you know, Corporal Esparza sitting in the 7-ton and being on the phone and like figuring it out, and how much it's like, we're not here to hold all of the young service members' hands and say, you know, click this button, tap this link, like this is how you do it. The whole point is to kind of give this experience that you and I have now, where we're like, look at what happened when we invested in real estate, we invested in other assets, and then we held on to it, you know, for 10, 15 years. Like you and your wife are millionaires because of the investments you made, and you still had to figure it out, you know? So it's like, I think that's the main lesson I would take and hope that everybody listening is kind of keying in on right now, is you don't have to get the little things right. You're going to have to learn by doing, and you make some small mistakes. But if you have the big plan and that big picture in your mind, then you're going to be all right. And you're going to look back 10 years from now and be like, I can't believe, look at what I've created. You know, maybe they'll be standing on the deck of the Boxer in 10 years, right where you were, and celebrating their own gains.
Yeah. You know, I remember my first deployment, it was 2007 in Ramadi, Iraq. But I drove this major around, Major Durden. He was a lawyer. He was a JAG. And our job was civil affairs. You know, we would go to different FOBs and, you know, talk to the local Iraqis and pretty much pay out for damages that we caused, right? We took over someone's home to, you know, make it into a little FOB, or, you know, we destroyed someone's house, you know, or, you know, we ran over someone's sheep. So we would go and talk and, you know, give money out. But I remember at the time he told me, he's like, hey, invest in Marble. And, you know, he kind of gave me instructions, you know, to go on Robinhood and, you know, create an account, invest in Marble. And this is in 2007. This is before a lot of these Spider-Man and I, you know, all these movies, you know.
Yeah.
And
before smartphones,
I tried.
And everything.
But I was 19 years old, and I really did not know how to do it. I tried, and it was like one of those things where, again, this is before I was married. My mom did my taxes until I was like 20 years old, right? So I just didn't know how to do it. And I look back at that, and I'm like, man, can you imagine if I would have invested my deployment money into more? You know, what happened a few years later? Disney bought out Marvel, and that's the stories wrote. I mean, if you look at Disney and what they've done with that brand is crazy, you know? So like, I think sometimes too, young service members, they get lazy and they just don't see the bigger picture, and they forget about it, and they just go with the moment, you know? If I could tell you, instead of investing in Marvel, I went back home and I dropped $8,000 to getting my truck painted, lifted, wheels and everything. I still got that damn truck, right? But I mean, yeah, it is dumb. Even this last deployment, XRP was at 50 cents, 50 cents. I had a room, the birthing, full of Marines. And I told them, right now is the time to get into XRP. I told them, I'm like, you know, back in 2018, I had a friend who told me to get into it at like 18 cents. And I didn't, you know, I just couldn't, you know, I just didn't do it, you know. And I'm like, man, can you imagine if I would have done that? You know, but I told my Marines, get into XRP, XRP, XRP. Do this, right? There's Coinbase, there's Crypto.com, there's Uphold, a bunch of them. Get into it, get into it. And I would preach it, I would preach it. Nothing, you know, not one of them invested, you know. And then, you know, we're in Guam, you know, they're out there, you know, buying, you know, Jordans and watches, all kinds of stuff, you know. And then, you know, XRP got up to like $3 and what, 30, 40 cents? And then I'm telling my Marines, do you remember that time we were in the Pacific and XRP was 50 cents? It is now at 340. Like if you would have invested this, you would be at this, you know? And, you know, sometimes just young Marines, they just don't. I wish I can just like tap them on the head to like really start thinking about the future, because it does come quick, you know? And it is getting very expensive out there. You know, I go grocery shopping. I really don't pay attention to, you know, what are you gonna do? Oh, you gotta buy groceries,
right?
You know, but it is expensive. You know, there's not a time where I go to a gas station and I don't care about the price. I have to fill up, you know. But yesterday I was looking at the price, and I'm like, wow, you know, $4.58, that's a lot of money. There's, you know, for me, there's never really, I don't think about it, I'm not affected by it too much. Oh, but I'm like, man, you know, how are these younger kids, younger families, how are they getting by? Like if, you know, they don't have multiple avenues of income coming in, you know? So, but yeah, you know, I try my best to go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say the numbers don't lie. When you look at it just during your career, my career, like over the past two decades, prices have gone up way faster than anybody's base pay has gone up, than wages are going up. So you have to your point, you've got to come up with different ways to bring income into your life. And I don't think there's a lot of Marines out there or any member of any branch of the service who's got a lot of spare time. You know, we're in there from 0530 to 1900 on an average day, and you go to the field and you deploy, and there's not time for another part-time or even full-time gig. So one of the quickest paths to getting that extra income is by buying assets, you know, buying rental real estate, in your case, you know, talking about buying crypto or stocks. And those are the kind of things that you might not see it right away, but 5, 10, 20 years down the line, they're going to change your life. When we look at it, though, like your experience with those Marines on ship, it's the same experience that everybody has, you know, in our position right now, where we're like, hey, look, we've learned all these lessons. I'm trying to share that wisdom with you, and you just get the blank stares back. What do you think is like an effective way to communicate it? You know, and I was thinking about it, like, sorry, there's a little bit of an aside, but I was thinking about the birthday ball. And when I woke up this morning, there was like a soft bugling sound in my ear of like the Marine Corps hymn. And my whole time in uniform, the Marine Corps was just like a pain about the birthday ball. You know, like you're working hard and all of a sudden there's like a sergeant major like right here, like it's, you know, like you're at recruit training again, and he's like, did you buy your ball ticket yet? And there's, you know, you're like, can you chill out, man? Like, it's not fun when you're just hassling me all the time to go to the birthday ball, but then like you go and you have fun, right? It's like, as Marines, we're kind of programmed to be like, get out of my face. Don't tell me what to do. I'm going to obey your orders immediately, but come on, man. And so I feel like that's the same thing with investing, is it's just in like, we're all type A people in the military. It's just in our personality to be like, you can't tell me what to do. I'll figure it out myself. And yet, especially in investing, if you take 10 or 15 years to actually figure that out, you're leaving hundreds of thousands of dollars or millions of dollars of wealth on the table, and it's getting to be too late. So like, how do we get around that, where we're just saying like, you got to invest and start now and trust us as the older version of you? You know, like, I guess what another way to ask that is like, when you were at least kind of open to it when you were a 19-year-old driving around a Humvee, but like, think about your buddies, you know, who are there with you, are probably like not even thinking about it. Like, how do we kind of like communicate it?
You know what? But, you know, going back to that story on ship, you know, but I did have Marines who would come and talk to me on the side and be like, hey, Gunny, how do I do this? You know, how do I buy a house? I'm getting orders to Paris Island, you know, to Beaufort, you know, I'm looking at a house. What do you advise? I did have that a lot. And I would sit with them on the computer and kind of go through Zillow and kind of go over the need and want, you know, how big is your family? You know, what do you absolutely need? And what is a want? A want is like a pool in the backyard. A want is like a 3-car garage. But like a need, do you need a 4-bedroom? Do you need a 2-bath? You know, do you need like a, you know, a special needs access? Whatever it is, you know, from there, just kind of making them see, okay, I know that the banks will always tell you, real estate agents will always tell you, you know, to go high and do this. But I'm like, let's look at the market and kind of go based on, you know, how you can get a home where in 10 years, you know, you're getting more back in return, where it's more, it's valued more. You know, is a brand new home nice? Absolutely. But what if you were to buy one a little bit further away, add 15 minutes to your commute, but let's say a home that's 20, 30 years old that needs a little bit of work, right? But it's almost 25% less. But now you kind of, with 10 years of being inside the home, or even 4 years, and kind of, you know, making it a little nicer with, you know, a little bit of remodeling, you know, could that home be worth more in 10 years than a brand new home, a cookie cutter home? You know, looking at, you know, not even, you know, what areas do you want to live in, right? Let's look at the school district there. You know, let's look at rentals, you know, like what are homes going for rental? So when you leave there in 4 years, let's see if it makes sense to buy a brand new home for that high number, you know? Or what if you But if you're kind of in the middle and you've got a nice starter home that's a little older, but potentially you can rent that out and still kind of come off even or maybe make a few hundred bucks here and there. So I did have, you know, Marines and I will sit them down. You know, we were limited on computers, but we will actually go into like online and kind of looking into all of those things. I will bring them in also, kind of show them the numbers. And I think for a lot of Marines, they really don't believe it unless they see it on paper, you know? And it's a lot of people, you know? And, you know, once in a while, you know, some of my very close Marines, I will show them like, hey, look at my portfolio. I wouldn't show them the number, but I will show them my portfolio. This is what I have. I will show them my homes. All right, hey, this is my home that I rent out. This is how much I bought it for. This is how much it's valued now. This is my mortgage, $1,346. This is how much I rented for, $3,200. You do the math, right? I get that back every single month for nothing. I mean, it's every month. I show my house in Idaho, the same thing. This is what I bought it for. This is what I value. This is my $1,500 payment. And then this is my, you know, for what I rented for, the $2,400. And I show them to start getting that wheel turning, like, man, I need to start kind of seeing if I can use my entitlement, you know? But that's, I think with a lot of the Marines is, like you said earlier, it's not dragging them by the hand. We're just, I think a lot of them, we're just so focused on mission, you know, and I love the Marine Corps. I absolutely do. But I think it does a very well, a good job of sucking everything away into the mission, which is good. But at times we got to pause and really sit these Marines down and give them that knowledge. We'll try to do the wickets, right? The check in the box, like, oh, we give them a financial class. What, you know, a financial class, you know, to save money and, you know, don't buy a car at a high interest rate, you know, the Navy Marine Corps Relief Society. I mean, little things like that. Let's start thinking big. Cause I wish I would have, you know, had someone back in 2000 and when did I get back from Afghanistan? 10? I wish I had a mentor that at the time, how I did XRP to my Marines. I wish and back in 2010, I had someone to tell me, hey, Chris, there's this new crypto coming out and it's called Bitcoin. If you invest $100, you'll have thousands because right now it's at 2 cents, you know? Can you imagine? I mean, besides that major and yourself later in my career, I didn't have that, you know?
But it's everything you're saying is like, it's, there's two really important lessons that we can take from that. And the first is when we just go around saying like, hey, you should save or plan for retirement. Like, of course, nobody's going to listen to us because it's just kind of generic. And so we have to take those leadership lessons that we learn as officers, non-commissioned officers, and not just in the Marine Corps, but all the branches, that it's leadership by example. And, you know, these young guys are all smart. Young men and women are all smart. And so if we can do that a better job of like showing and actually giving the numbers, then that'll probably get their interest for sure. You know, and then that's also when you're talking about the man, I wish I had this. It reminded me of the first moment that I came up with like this concept to create the Military Wealth Coach. I didn't know what it would be called. I didn't know how it was going to look, but it was back in 16 when I was at 2nd Tank Battalion. And there, when I took command there, there was a group of like 8 or 9 Marines who were all EASing. And the company first sergeant's approach had been like, you know what, you guys just sit in the office. And then anytime that the CO needs something, like you're going to be their clerk. And it's going to be a bullpen because half the time you're going to run for, you know, for top to go do maintenance stuff or you make runs for me. And then the other half of the time you're going to be going to that transition readiness seminar. Right. And so he did them the courtesy of like pulling them out of the trenches and the day-to-day grind so they could focus on their transition. I've never seen that anyplace else. Like it's always like, oh, you don't have time to go to TRS, like figure it out. But during that time, Corporal Black came back one day. It was Tuesday, so it was like the second day of their seminar. And he came back in, and I saw his cover just go flying across the room, and then something slamming. And I was like, oh, here we go. So I come out of my office. I'm like, hey, what's going on? What are we doing? And he's like, sir, can I speak freely? And I was like, yes. And he's like, what the bleep is going on with the Marine Corps? He's like, I am getting out right now. And I just got back from a whole course on how I can use the thrift savings plan and other benefits and savings deployment plan. I missed out on all that because nobody ever taught me. And here I am getting out and it's too late. And I realized, just like you've just said, is we're full gas until the very end. And so that's a reason why this Service and Wealth podcast exists, why the blog exists, why the books exist, is that if we can get it into the hands of, you know, the E1s, E2s when they're first coming in, and the O1s and the O2s, we catch them at the front and give them all that knowledge that the service is not going to take the time to train because it's so mission focused. But that's, that's what we're trying to do at least.
No, yeah, 100%. We are so quick to look at their PFT scores and, you know, it's proficiency, but it's the little things, like you said. I mean, it's more than just the Marine Corps, right? I mean, it's a person, it's an American, it's a human. I mean, there's more to that behind that cover and that uniform. Another one is, you know, at the time it was Captain Garcia. This was the year 2000. When did I go to DI school? 2013. So it's like 2014. I've been in the Marine Corps already 8 years. He pulled me to the side, not really to the side. Everyone was out there, but he looked at me. He's like, "Hey, where's your thrift savings plan at?" And I looked at him and I'm like, "I don't know. The G fund, right?" He's like, have you moved it?" I'm like, "No." It's like, "How much are you investing?" Again, I had different priorities. I love cars. You know, I've always bought cars. And I was like 1%, you know, like nothing. And my, you know, when I was a young Marine, I was like, why would I invest into this? $300 a month, that's a lot of money. I would rather have that $300. You know, I remember like a week later, he pulled me into his office and kind of had me log in. I mean, I had to get my password and all that, you know, and when he showed me my return in, return of investment for like in the last 8 years, you're talking about like nothing, like $100, yeah. You know? And
maybe 100.
Like, yeah, maybe. And I remember I was like, what have I done? And he told me, "Hey, where you're at right now, just go 100% on the S fund and bump that number up to 10%. And I did that. I went 100% on the S fund, 10% of my daily pay. So from a sergeant to where I'm at now, you know, it's been the same, the 10%. And again, with every pay raise, with every rank, you know, that 10% gets bigger and bigger and bigger. I don't even need it. You know, when I pull up my LES, I see it. I'm like, yes, you know. And when I get that, when I get that document from Thrift Savings Plan of what I have, I'm just like, man, why didn't I do this sooner? You know,
mm-hmm.
But you'd be surprised. You'd be surprised. This was maybe a year ago. We were all like our staff for my battery. We were talking about Thrift Savings Plan within the staff. There was two staff sergeants who were contributing zero for the past like 10 years, you know, and ouch. It's, yeah, you know, so that. They're out there, and it comes to that is like we just don't know. We get told, but then it gets thrown in the back burner, and we forget about it, you know. And then there's others, and I would say the enlisted, we are affected a little bit more. I think officers, they have a lot more mentorship starting at a younger time in their career where they're not as back as a lot of the enlisted. For instance, like my little brother, you know, he's at the Naval Academy now on his second year. You know, he's already, you know, I already got him investing in CASPA and looking at, you know, certain things here and there. But yet in the enlisted side, you know, we need to do a better job of really within the check-in process is, you know, asking them about their family, you know, what are they doing? You know, how are they living? You know, what do they have, you know, saved up? You know, what is, you know, what different incomes are coming in, you know, because we just have to. If not, then, you know, they're going to get out and, you know, no one really, you know, hey, thank you for your service. And that's it. They need to get out at least with a little bit. And I think that's why the blended retirement system came in place. And that's one thing. 5%, they'll match that 5% and getting them started early. You know? But it's also trying to crack that shell because a lot of them don't see, they just see that number of money, that amount of money getting taken out. They don't see that it's going to come back 10, 20 years, 30, 40 years down the road.
Right. They won't see it until they wish they could. And then it's too late.
Yep.
And that is, you know, that's for the blended retirement system. It's one of the advantages is that the service automatically, or DFAS, I should say, automatically enrolls everyone at a 5% contribution every year. And so, you know, if those staff sergeants had come in since 2018, which I doubt they have, you know, that's probably a bit too fast to make it to E6, but like for the corporals out there,
it's doable.
I mean, maybe it's not. Doable now. It's doable. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Now, but they've been promoted pretty quick now.
That's wild, right? But then, you know, if you're like an, if you're like a corporal, so let's say, or a sergeant, let's say you came in like 2020 or something like that, you're getting automatically enrolled and you have to like physically turn in paperwork to your shop to like turn off that 5%. So it's almost like we, as a, the military community, the Department of War was like, we got to kind of make you do this. And the one thing I would like to point out is that the 5% service matching that you get into blended retirement, it doesn't kick in until after you've been in for 2 years. And some young service members use that as a reason to not save or not invest. They're like, well, I'm not going to get that 5%. But still, you've got to save for yourself, right? Like the matching 5% that you're eventually going to get, that's just like, you know, the cherry on top of the sundae or the gravy on top. And what it really comes down to is saving whatever you can from day one. So the, you know, and I think as we're talking about this, like it's a good opportunity to kind of like transition into a little more focused discussion on the thrift savings plan. You know, not sitting here asking you to disclose like balances or anything like that, but obviously you've been using the thrift savings plan. It is part of your retirement plan, but that's still like getting that money back. It's still another 20 plus years away for you. On the other hand, you know, in the next 8-9 months before you actually do retire, there's probably some things that you have to decide what to do about it. So what are some of the questions that, that you've been considering or decisions that you're thinking that you might be making with your TSP between now and when you actually EIS and get your DD-214?
Yeah. You know, it's good for the time that I've had it. I'm very proud, man, lucky that one. I am lucky that that is where it's at right now. And I believe my wife, so I'm still all in on the S fund. I never changed it. I just go big, go home kind of guy. My wife, she's in one of those life cycles. I think the 2030, the L-2030. And you can go into that one, you know, it's kind of automatic. From what I understand from that one is it does it automatically based on, you know, it goes heavy early in your career, but then it gets more conservative as you, you know, about an exit. But, you know, my question is, I'm still undecided if most likely I'm going to pull it out and transition it into like a 401. But, you know, I got a contact of someone who also can take that money and invest it into other things. I've heard some people, they just leave it in there. The only thing is once you're retired, no more can you contribute. You know, that's the big, that's the only caveat when it comes to leaving it in the TSP is you can no longer contribute. So whatever you have, you can still hold it and it'll still accumulate over the years. It's just no longer do you feed it. But that's one of the things that right now I'm still undecided on what is the smartest thing to do, you know, and what to do. Because again, me and my wife, we know we have this other pot of money here, right? And we're not going to touch it until we're in our 60s. Right. But it is nice. Right. What we have is comfortable is in whatever it goes into is there. I just don't know what is the best way of moving forward when I do retire.
Sure. Yeah. And that's good. So like you already hit on one of the key limitations, the thrift savings plan, you know, just to kind of like make sure the audience fully understands, it's a, just the government and military version of a 401k. And those plans are employer sponsored. So obviously, once you no longer work for that employer, you can no longer contribute to that plan and they're not going to make any matching contributions for you. But the money doesn't disappear. They can't, you know, they get in big trouble, right? So like you said, you still have that money. And basically what you're saying is I can leave it invested or maybe I take it with me. And you know, a couple of things that we think are important to consider is the expense ratios on the funds that the thrift savings plan offers, like the C fund, the S fund. We could talk about the other funds, but those are the only two that actually like have great performance. The expense ratio is like 0.025 or 0.035, which is half or a tenth, maybe even 100th of the cost of the same kind of funds elsewhere. So it's super cheap. A way to think about that, obviously, is if you're getting a 10% return and you have to pay a 3% fee, which is actually kind of common, especially for companies that contract for the Department of Defense, their 401ks, they have like 3%. You're actually only making 7%. So because it's so cheap, it's still going to give you great returns and it's a good deal. And then obviously, you know, another reason to keep it in there is that the C fund and the S fund are really good performers. And, you know, why not? Because as you said, you're waiting 20 plus years until you're going to withdraw it. So if you want to have the most money in retirement, go after those big, big, you know, 10, 20, 30% annual returns that you can get. And, you know, don't stress out if there's a year where the market goes down, because it's going to bounce back. We're yeah, still right so away. Far from retirement. You know, it's not like the, it's not like, you know, if you bought XRP and it crashes back down to a dollar, like now you're panicking and trying to figure out what you're doing, because XRP could be for like tomorrow. So
yeah,
it's all the big run, big long run. But there are some other things that are going to come up. So are you familiar with the K loan? Have you ever heard of that? So you can take a loan on any 401k of up to $50,000 or half the account value. So if you only have $50,000 in your TSP, the most you could borrow would be 25. But so long as you have at least 100, you can borrow $50,000. You can only start that loan when you're still in uniform on active duty. Like if, for example, you saw an investment in a small business that you wanted to acquire and you didn't have the cash, or maybe like another investment property, the TSP for anybody reaching the end of their time in service, they can go and get that $50,000 loan. So long as they do it before the DD-214, because even if you kept all your money in it, got your DD-214 and then came back next Monday and you're like, hey, I want to take out my loan right now. They're like, oh, sorry, you're no longer active duty. You can't do that. And so that's one thing to consider. It's usually going to be, it'll be competitive, right? So it'll be like maybe prime plus 1%. So it might be right now, it might be like 5.25%. It's a 5-year amortization. So you got to pay it back fairly quickly. But if you're able to invest it in something that's going to give you a 10 or 15% return on investment that you couldn't have bought otherwise, you know, it's still making you money. So that's one thing to consider. Another, you mentioned in there something about, I think you said convert it to a 401k or something to that effect. Do you remember saying that? Yeah.
Yeah, I did.
Do you want to explain a little bit more what you mean by that?
So from my understanding is pretty much, I can pull it and then put it into, you know, kind of into a, I won't say civilian, right? But into a traditional 401k. Or is that not doable?
So to have a 401k, you'd have to have one of two things. You would have to have your own LLC or a sole proprietorship or other company that has a Schedule C on your annual tax returns showing that it's an actual business and has an employer identification number from the IRS. And if you have that, you can set up your own 401k. And you can roll over the funds from your TSP into that.
Okay.
And that works for anybody, right? Like, so like, it doesn't matter if you have a job or you don't have a job. If you have a side hustle with an LLC, you could do that. To roll it over into a traditional 401, a regular 401k, you would have to have a job with an employer that offers one. So,
okay. Yeah. You know, I mean, I do have, you know, the IEN, you know, like my own LLC for my business. So I could do it.
Yeah, you could create what's called a solo 401k, and then you find a bank. I'm not endorsed or like sponsored by this bank, but like I use Solera Bank out of Denver, Colorado, and they're awesome. And they are specially set up for people who have solo 401ks. And so you put your money in there and then you can manage it however you want, right? Which is pretty great. The other option that you have is, you've definitely heard of individual retirement accounts, right? An IRA.
Yeah.
So you can also roll over into an IRA from the TSP. So that might be an option you want to consider, because if you don't have an employer and you don't want to like deal with the headaches of like creating your own 401k and managing it, which they're not a lot of headaches, but you could also roll it over into an IRA.
Okay.
Right. So, and then one other thing, just to make sure that we're on the same page, because you had said like a traditional, obviously you have Roth and you have traditional, and those are... you can do conversions. Have you ever heard of conversion?
No, I have not.
Okay. So let me ask then, when you look at your thrift savings plan, is all of your money in a Roth TSP? Is it all in traditional TSP, or is it kind of mixed in between?
It's on the traditional.
It's all traditional? Okay. So this is actually a really good topic to talk about, right? Is the traditional money, when you hit retirement, it'll be taxed as ordinary income. So let's say you have $2 million in there, and you want to take out $100,000 a year in retirement, you have to report that to the IRS. They take down your standard deduction, and then you have to pay income tax on the rest of it. And so it can get pretty expensive. Like we're talking $15,000 or $20,000 a year in income tax on that amount. Now, what you can do, you know, before that pot of money gets to be too much is you can do a conversion from traditional to Roth, and you'll pay some tax on it now. But if you only have $100,000 to convert now, you know, that's,
yeah,
and you pay $15,000 in taxes on it now. That's way better than having $2 million in the future and paying, you know, $15,000-$20,000 every year. So,
yeah, no, I'll look into it. I did not know.
Yeah. And that's something like, you know, maybe when you do have time and you do look into it, like, let's just connect again on the phone and we'll just talk about it, because it's a little bit complicated. There's some rules you have to be aware of to make sure you don't screw it up. And it's stupid, right? It's like, if you make one wrong step and when you're clicking the buttons, the IRS doesn't care it was a mistake. You know, like, they'll just be like, oh, sorry, you clicked the wrong button. Like, now you're going to give us taxes on this. So you just have to make sure you do it correctly. And then you can do it for a pretty low tax amount now.
Okay. No, yeah. It sounds like, you know, when you hit that age in retirement, it sounds like a lot of people kind of, there's a lot of regret sometimes. You know, they get hit hard because they didn't know, you know, they didn't ask until it was too late, you know, so.
Right, right.
It's good now. There's a, towards the end of my, go ahead.
Sorry, go ahead. No,
it's, and this is what I said earlier, right? You know, to give knowledge and to also receive knowledge, right? Because I still have, let's say, 5 years, I mean, 5 months left of service. So I was like, this is where, you know, I got to start really making those decisions, you know, what I'm going to do for, you know, 20, 30 years down the road.
Yeah, absolutely. And I forget off the top of my head the title of the book, but if you Google, like, it's like, just Google, like, should I convert? When should I convert my traditional to Roth? There's a guy who wrote a book about it, and he's basically like, under all circumstances, the answer is do the conversion as soon as possible. And they talk about how they have retirees who are like, you know, 70 years old, and they've got like $5 million in their traditional account, and they want to convert it into a Roth, and they owe like $2 million in taxes. You know, like, the longer you wait, the more expensive it gets. So it's something to do right away. And also, we're in a really unique opportunity for folks in your position who are into real estate and potentially going to have to do a conversion. Is if you invest in real estate, you know, like the new Trump budget bill or whatever brought back the bonus depreciation. So, you know, as you transition out of the military, you could go and buy an investment property and you can depreciate a ton of that value, and it can offset the amount that you convert from your traditional TSP into a Roth, and you could end up getting away with paying zero taxes. So that's a hack or a TTP, right? We call it a TTP, that you would do this conversion in the same year you're buying real estate. Or what? I'm sorry.
Okay. A loophole?
Yeah, a loophole, right? Right. So that's something that's really worth considering. And, you know, one last thing about the TSP that I think is worth mentioning, since you brought it up and your wife's not here. It would have been great if she could have made it, but like you said, it was bad timing with her having to go to OTS. So the life cycle funds over time, they slowly move your money more into bonds. And if you look, when you start out, and the fund that they give you, the L fund, it's supposed to correspond to the year of retirement. So if she's in the L 2030, that would mean she's like 55 years old, but I don't think she's 55 years old, right?
No. So is it a 2050?
Yeah, probably something more like that. So,
okay.
You know, if you look at it like the 2050, as that fund right now is averaging about 8 or 9% per year returns. But as she gets older and closer to retirement, those average returns are going to go down to 6% and then 5% and eventually down to almost 4%. But you're trying to have the most amount of money possible when you retire. So, like, the best thing for her to do, and again, it's, she's got a lot of runway, right? Is if she just moved it all into the C or the S fund, then she's going to get 10% per year every year. And she'll probably end up with, you know, I've done the math, and we don't need to go into it too much, but like, somebody who's only in the L fund, by the time they hit 62, they're probably going to have about $1.2 million less than somebody who's invested in the C fund. So, you know, this is not investment advice. You make your own decisions, but if you want more money in retirement, you know, don't invest in the life cycle funds.
Yeah. Okay. I'll pass that on to her.
Right. And then you can tell her I said it so she doesn't get mad at you.
Yeah. I mean, and those are the things that we really have to, you know, we have to talk about, you know, because it took me 8 years to move mine from the G Fund, you know, to what it's now. If I never would have done that, I mean, it's crazy the amount of money that I would have lost out on. And it just makes me wonder, like, man, what if I did as a young private, you know, because I checked in the fleet as a private, you know, so it's like, why didn't I do that as a private? You know, I mean, those years matter, you know, but yeah, I think the Naval Academy, just because we've been there, I think we do a really good job of getting them ready there, you know, in the classroom environment. And, you know, because, you know, I keep in contact with many of the students, and a lot of them are already investing, you know, a lot of them already have their first rental property that they bought at Pensacola, you know, at flight school, that they're there for like 3 years. And, you know, they were investing, you know, they pulled out their loan, you know, their what's mm-hmm. it called? What do they call it? That loan that they
career starter,
that they qualify starter for zero, whatever interest, you know, they pulled that out and they invested that money. And I'm like, man, that's super smart, you know? So, but yeah, these are the conversations that the young service members have to really, especially the enlisted side, we have to kind of hone in on and put pressure on, so they're not in the same boat as myself, you know, being a sergeant at DI school, you know, working 20 hours a day. And, you know, but when it comes to my financial, you know, structure, you know, there's nothing really there, you know? So, and who knows, what if I would have got out of the 10-year mark? Like, you know, because I really mm-hmm. thought about getting out at my 10-year mark, going law enforcement, going LAPD, CHP. You know, I would have got out with nothing, you know, besides a thank you for your service, you know. So it's pretty nuts.
Yeah. Yeah. And we can just do one more plug for saving your money into the TSP and investing it in the C fund or the S fund, because you get to take it with you when you go, right? And I've talked to young service members who are like, I don't want to save into that. I'm going to use an IRA. You know, even at the academy, they're like, I don't want to use TSP because, like, I don't think I'm going to stay in for 20 years. And it's like, it doesn't matter. It's yeah. your money. You're going to get it back. And then you've made a really great point also. And like just the example with the Naval Academy about how the young officers and even future officers are getting that kind of mentorship, because we surround them with more senior people. And,
absolutely,
you know,
yep.
it's a different pace, like, of training. And so you have those opportunities. And so really what we have to do is kind of figure out a way as a community to, like, reach out and engage with the junior enlisted, and also, you know, empower our NCOs and get them the knowledge too. And that all comes back to probably just something like not packing the schedule so full with useless stuff and just taking some time to do some kneecap to kneecap conversations about, like, how to take care of yourself, like, in a bigger picture.
Yeah, no, 100%.
And, you know, that kind of goes into another topic that I want to make sure we hit on while we got you here today, which is, and you mentioned it early on about the Survivor's Benefit Plan and the SBP, right? And so I imagine you've gotten at least like a heads up about that or have a little bit of understanding. Do you want to explain what that is for the audience?
Oh, yeah. It's the, our department's way is like my father, right? He passed away 3 years ago. You know, the LAPD, he did 39 years. So, you know, my stepmother, you know, she's getting the 50% of, you know, his income, even though he, you know, I mean, now he's passed, but she's still making it work. You know, the same thing with me. I believe it's 55 of my, if I were to pass, you know, my wife would be able to still collect my retirement, you know, for her and my family.
Yeah, it's basically like an income insurance plan. And the trade-off is you give up 6.5% of your monthly pension amount, and then that buys Correct. You the income insurance. And then if you pass, then your surviving spouse would get 55%. But there's some limitations, right? So first of all, it's only your surviving spouse. So if your spouse dies before you, there's exactly zero benefit, and you've just been paying off all those years, you know, 6.5%. And the other thing too is, like, you can't have it directed to, say, like, a surviving child, right? So I'm curious if you have thought about some other options than the SBP, if you've thought about, like, life insurance or any other kind of, like, things that you could invest in that could kind of have the same function.
You know, on that, I have not. You know, I know my wife, that we had this conversation because, like, her job also, you know, at the hospital, they offer something like that. I think we kind of we said no to it, but no, we have not really. Besides, man, this was when our children were very small. I forgot. I mean, my wife knows majority of it, you know, but our two kids have something with like New York Life. I don't know exactly what it is. All I know is we've been paying $35 for each child for the past like 15 years. But no, I have not really looked into like a secondary, you know, benefits plan if, you know, something were to happen to me and my spouse.
Okay. Well, I want to use this opportunity to just kind of like share a different strategy. And I think it's great that what you're doing for the kids, like every person should have life insurance. And one of the things that I find kind of strange about the survivor's benefit plan is it could be good for your spouse, right? I mean, I'm sure they don't want you to die, but if your spouse dies, you know, like what does that do for you? And so just kind of crunching the numbers, if you are to, I'm just kind of looking at my screen here because I did some of the math, but I did like an E9 or an O5 who opted into the survivor's benefit program, and they are paying, their premiums are going to be about $250 a month that they're paying. And let's say they pay that in for like 30 years, right? Because you retire, you're right around 40. Let's say you die a little bit young, right around 70. You've been paying that in for 30 years. You're going to get, and then let's say your spouse lives for 5 years longer than you. The net benefit to your spouse is going to be about $50,000, right? They'll get about an extra $100,000, but it costs you about an extra $50,000 to get that. So the SBP is worth about $50,000. But if you took $250 a month and you invested it for the next 30 years, you would have a brokerage account with over $600,000 in it. Or you could buy a life insurance, a 30-year life insurance policy with $1 million payout, right? And you can get that probably for like $100 a month, $120 a month, something like that. So, and the thing about the life insurance is you could take your $250 that you would be spending on an SBP premium, and you could buy $1 million policy on yourself to take care of your spouse if you die first, and you could buy $1 million policy on your spouse, so you would be taken care of if they pass first. So and then, you know, the other reason why I try to encourage that is because you can also name your children as additional beneficiaries. If for whatever reason, you know, everybody can get a little bit, a piece of the pie in that case, and you can take care of the whole family. So that, okay. I have a blog post on that, and I'll send you a link to that after this episode, and I'll link it in the show notes for anybody who's listening so they can read it and look at the numbers. Cause like you said earlier, you know, you gotta show it to me to believe it. And the numbers kind of speak for themselves. And full disclosure, that whole blog post was something that was created essentially when I was asked by the IPAC, by the admin shop, like, are you going to sign SBP or are you going to decline it? And I did the math. And then I went to my wife and I was like, look, if you just let me take this money and invest it, it'll be worth more. And she's like, okay, fine. I'll sign it. Like, we don't have to do it. But I would personally trade, you know, I'd personally rather have $600,000 or $1 million than $100,000 any day.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, we'll have this conversation again.
Yeah. But I do want to get your feedback on that blog post too, because sometimes the numbers get a little bit chewy, right? Like if you get too much into the math, like you can kind of lose your audience. And so I'll be eager to get your feedback, because so far there's no comments on it. So it's either really convincing or it's too confusing.
Okay. I'll listen to it. Yeah, absolutely.
Cool. Well, I appreciate that. And you know, the whole like life insurance thing too, is that anything that you've thought about? Cause right now you're still covered by SGLI and probably TSGLI.
Correct.
But have you purchased additional life insurance for yourself or your wife?
No, I haven't thought about that far. You know, I've been fully, you know, kind of engaged in what I'm doing now. You know, and there's many things that I still need to do. I need to do that. The older I get, the more I realize that we do have a few things that, you know, what if something were to happen, you know, is like a living trust, right? Like it's having something where worst case scenario, you know, our children are not getting, you know, taxed, you know, because we do have three homes, you know, we do have all these things that they will be put in a very bad spot, you know, when it comes to, you know, paying Uncle Sam, because we haven't taken the initiative to go out there and get a professional, you know, put everything in a living trust and, you know, doing all those things. But no, I have, you know, when it comes to the question, I have not, you know, even thought about the life insurance, you know, once I retire.
Well, I'm really glad you brought up the trust and the will as well, because if I'm thinking correctly and recalling correctly about, you know, my military career, and you can kind of tell me if I'm right or wrong here, but the only time that they ever talk to us about like doing a will and trust is like before we're about to deploy to combat. And they're like, hey, you should do this. And we're like, what?
And it's generic.
Why? What's going to happen?
It's already there. Yeah. It's already, I mean, it's, yeah, but it's not really a rule. I don't even look at it as a real, a will, you know, because it's just very, it's a template. You put a few things in there. You know, I remember my first will going to Iraq. I think, like, again, being 19 years old, I want to be buried in my dress blues with my Dodger hat. That was it, you know? Yeah. And I signed, and boom, that's all my family would have had. Hey, this knucklehead wants to be buried in his dress blues with this Dodger hat. But no, yeah, it's no one really does it. You know, my father, he passed away, the smartest man I know, you know, so many investments and so many things that he did in his 39 years in LAPD, never had a will, you know. And now, you know, we're doing that whole probate, and it's a mess, you know.
Is that still going on?
So it is still going on, you know.
Wow. He
passed away.
I mean, for
March
everybody listening, that's like
March.
3 years.
Yeah. So
yeah, I'm sorry.
That's what me and my wife, you know, when she comes back, is like, we need to really stop putting it off to tomorrow, because you just never know. You know, I never thought he was going to pass. He was the one I thought he was going to be, you know, 90, 100 years old, but you just never know. So it's like, we have to do it, you know, like I'm speaking for myself, but like, we just put it in the bag, you know, hey, we'll wait. You just never know when it's too late.
Yeah. You never know. And the thing is these are things that, are not on the TRS transition readiness checklist to do, but putting like buying additional life insurance and using the base legal. You know, my wife and I made sure that before I retired that we use the base legal to draft our legal documents, because it's free. And the lawyers were fantastic, right? Because it's not just a simple, but when you get to that point, you can say, I also want a health directive. I want a living will. They will do it all for you for free. And so to anybody who's getting ready to transition, you don't even have to be retiring. You can be getting out after like 5 years or 8 years. Go to Base Legal and have them draft up your legal documents for free. It's a no-brainer, you know. But again, TRS is not going to tell you to go do that.
Yeah, and that's their job. What else are they doing there at the JAG office?
Right.
You know, and no, they're dealing with a bunch of shenanigans too. No, but yeah, no, you're absolutely right.
Yeah. Well, yeah. But it's important, like what you're saying is like, we're not here just to badmouth anybody and say that they're like deliberately misleading anybody or not doing their jobs. There's a checklist given to them and there's a lot on it. And if you haven't like sat down and thought about other things, then, you know, you're not going to do it. So that's why we're here. And that's why we're having this conversation, is we're finding out different things to think about. You've got about, you know, 8 months, you know, like your EAS is the date that actually counts. So you can save some of these things to do until you're on terminal leave, but you can't wait until after you're out. But you know, you have a pretty good checklist, I think, so far, which is, you're probably going to want to, if you don't have an IRA, you're probably going to open an IRA. You're going to look at making a rollover conversion to get your money, some of your money out of your TSP and put it into a different retirement account. You're going to have that conversation about the survivor's benefit plan. You're going to take a look at life insurance. You're going to take a look at your will and trust and a living trust. Are there any things that we're missing right now that you're thinking about or you have questions about? Because, you know, I want to respect our timeline and we need to kind of wrap things up. But what do we miss? That we haven't even talked about college, right? But maybe that's a whole nother episode.
Oh, man. No, there's so many benefits, you know, the military, you know, when people ask like, hey, should my son join, you know, I always lead off with the reality that, you know, we are here for a reason. You know, the past few years has been kind of peacetime Marine Corps. I reminded my mom, you know, she's the Navy midshipman mom, and she's super proud. She's always posting pictures of my little brother, prestigious, the Naval Academy. And it's like, time out, you know, you never know. I mean, something can happen and boom, you know, your precious midshipman is going to be in the front lines in a submarine or some, you know, in the Marine Corps, something like that. But, you know, on the positive side, you know, the military does provide so many tools and so many resources and opportunities that no one else gets. You know, that's what has led me to, you know, where I'm at now. You know, another smart decision I made was like, maybe it was when I was in Okinawa, Japan, I re-enlisted. The year had to be like 2017, 18, but I transferred my GI Bill to my family. I gave them each a certain percentage. And you can always go back on Mail Connect and kind of fluctuate the numbers. My daughter's at the University of Hawaii at Manoa, fully paid for books. And, you know, she's living in an apartment that's contracted by the university, you know, and that apartment is $1,000 a month, you know. And you know, we got a letter from, you know, from the VA of what they're going to pay us out monthly, you know, and it's $3,500 a month. And it's,
wow,
it is nuts. You know, I'm like, it's, you know, I'm telling my wife, I'm like, man, this is like a full ride. It's better than a full ride to college. You know, who else gets those opportunities, you know? But I was smart enough to transfer when I re-enlisted. So I think that's the caveat to that, right? You got to re-enlist and you got to transfer it. I think after 8 years, that's when you are entitled to it. But my kid is going to school for absolutely free and they're paying us. So that's another $3,500 coming in. That's another pocket of money, you know, and it's crazy. Not many people, you know, get that opportunity besides like midshipmen who are going to the service academies, or like my daughter's boyfriend who is the quarterback for BYU, where, you know, it's full ride, you know, it's everything's paid for. So those are the little things that I do preach about the military, but like just how many, you know, how many awesome benefits that we have for serving. And it hasn't been easy. I've been in for 18 years and I've had a lot of, you know, tough times in the Marine Corps. You know, my body sometimes it feels like it's broken, but I think I've did good in, you know, getting back, you know, not what is owed to me, you know, but I took advantage of those opportunities.
Yeah, of course. And I think a way that I put it is like you earn it, right? Like it's a right way to treat your people for doing what they do while they're in uniform is to offer these other benefits to make it worth their while, because, you know, like the paycheck's not like nobody's sitting here earning like CEO money, but in the long run, the benefits really add up. You know, before we wrap things up, there's one question I just remembered I wanted to ask you, and that is the looking at the mortgages you have on the rentals. So these are pretty well paid down, pretty low monthly payments, and you've got a lot of equity in those houses. I assume you've also got like some of your VA loan eligibility tied up in some of those properties. And so I'm curious if you've thought about doing like a refinance or a cash out refinance, either to get your VA eligibility back to full eligibility so you could use it again, or to pull some of the equity out, turn it into cash you can use for more investments.
Okay. No. Great question. So we have our two rental properties and then we have our home now, beautiful home. You know, when we bought this one, we didn't even come to California to look at it. We bought it all through kind of photos, and I did all the, you know, Google Earth, and I had one of my really good friends who is a real estate agent down here. He was the one that was in here with the phone, and you know, I did my due diligence on buying this home, but we bought it without ever stepping foot into it. But I did the numbers. This home we bought it for what, $670. But when I looked at the history of the home, you know, back in 2021, this home hit, you know, the highest of a, you know, and you got to do the numbers between Zillow and is it called Redfin, and you know, all these. At some point, it did hit the 826 mark. You know, so I always thought like, all right, it has the potential to be back there. You know, and that was a really big deciding factor of why I bought this house. You know, fast forward now 2 years. Yeah, this I really think if I were to put this house in the market, it could be anywhere from, you know, the 790 to the even to the 850, you know, mark. You know, we've done a lot of work, you know, to it as well. But we are tied with our VA loan. The one in Idaho, the one in California, the one in Murrieta, our first rental property, that's a conventional loan. We refinanced that home. I forgot. I think it was like 2019, 2020. We refinanced into a conventional loan. That's why we got our eligibility back. My wife, we used hers for the one in Idaho. So when the time came, we had the VA loan for this home. But now we're looking at, again, the next chapter in life. You know, where do we want to absolutely settle down? And I mean, there's no complaints for this home, you know, but I've always wanted acreage, you know. I want to live a little bit, you know, still be within distance of like homes, you know, not in the boondocks. But I'm, you know, right now we're looking at a home down like in Temecula, like the wine country region. And so we have been looking for the past year, you know, for the perfect home. So we are thinking about like, what is the best, what's the way plan, you know, what's the way forward? You know, do we sell this home? Cause you know, we're going to have to get that VA entitlement back, you know? So it's like, do we do the same thing we did to the first house, or do we sell this one to clear it up? You know, there's a lot of questions there, you know, but we do want to buy another home, and we're just trying to, and that's what it is asking the questions of how do we, you know, how do we get more bang for the buck? What makes more sense? Because I know this home, we cannot rent it for for the gain that the other ones have. There's no way possible, you know? So that's there. But everything comes with knowledge. You know, if I would have known a lot of these things, I would have had the house in Annapolis. You know, I would have done a HELOC. I would have done something. I didn't know it. You know, back then I just didn't think at the time to refinance the house in Idaho, you know, get that VA loan kind of cleared up, even potentially pull out some equity and put it into the one in Annapolis. We didn't do that, you know? So now it's going to the drawing board. It's like, all right, so how can we get the next home, and which house are we going to clear up? So we're not thinking of this home, but we're really kind of deciding maybe it is time to shut the door to the home in Idaho. So once we shut that door in Idaho, we will get my wife's entitlement back, you know, based on our income and all that. And then I believe if we sell a home, and if we kind of convert that money and put it into a new home within, what is it, like 6 months, then you won't get taxed on the capital gains. I believe, I forgot what that was called.
Yeah, yeah. So the first thing I want to say is with the VA, I think this changed actually in January of 2024, but it's only really becoming like common knowledge now. Well, it's not even common knowledge now. It's like the lenders and agents are just figuring it out. But the VA, up until January of 2024, there was a maximum amount of VA eligibility based on zip code. So like in Southern California, it would be like 1.3 million. That's gone. If you have full entitlement, you can use a VA loan to buy a $3 million house. And so I think the strategy you would want to, what's that?
Depending on your income, right? Like if you qualify and all that.
Right. Yeah, you still have to qualify, but. So this is a great thing to do, right? Because like if you have a little bit of VA entitlement that is used up on the Idaho home for your wife's entitlement, you could refinance out of that right now while you're still on active duty, restore her full entitlement, and then she could be that sort of primary borrower and go to a loan officer. They do the maximum mortgage worksheet. They find out, oh yes, you have your full entitlement. You're eligible for all of this. And then next year, while you still have like your max tax returns from your U-2 income from the military, that's probably if you don't just go out and get a new job straight away, that's probably going to be your best opportunity to qualify for a new loan. You know, because like once you go into retirement, they're not going to count like your VA disability income, which is a big chunk. And so your actual income can look like it's going down, even if it doesn't. And so you could kind of like do that kind of timing. That could be like mission 2026 is like refi and go buy or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
To answer your question, so what Chris was talking about was selling an investment property and the 1031 exchange. It's called a like kind exchange. And what that says is if you have an investment property and you sell it and then you go buy another like kind, so that means you sell a house, you go buy another house, you sell an apartment building, you go buy another apartment building with the proceeds from that sale, you don't have to pay the capital gains tax on it. But it's deferred. It doesn't go away. It's just deferred until either you finally sell or you die. And so the real strategy is you die, because once you die, it goes to zero. Well, it goes to zero and then your kids don't have to pay any tax, right? So that's like your best strategy with that. But there is one other thing that you could consider, and that is, are you familiar with the Section 121 exclusion on capital gains on selling a primary home?
You're testing me. Let me see. Is that the one selling your primary home? Is that the one where if the capital gains is more than $250,000 and you held it longer than 2 years, you get taxed a certain amount of money instead of, or is, no, or am I?
You got some of the numbers right. But so what it says is a single person who sells their primary home, so the one you lived in, if you live in it for any 24 months out of the last 5 years, it doesn't have to be 2 years in a row, just 24 months in the last 5 years, a single person does not owe tax capital gain tax on $250,000 worth of profit, and a married couple does not owe tax on $500,000 of profit.
Yep. So I was close.
That's
was
a big
close.
Deal. You're close.
Yep, it is.
But here's one thing that not many people know. And like, I did not know about this until a couple months ago, and I cracked open the tax code and I was reading about it. If you are in the military, you can use up to 10 years of your time on active duty to defer that benefit. So that means if you lived in that California home in 2011 and 2012 for 24 months, it's actually 24 months out of the last 15 years. So you have an opportunity with that, right? It's another one of those benefits that only the military gets and like can't be touched, is you can literally buy a house at the beginning of your career, live in it for 2 years, and then when you retire, you can sell it and pay essentially like zero tax on the capital gains. So that might complicate the decision about what to do with the properties, but...
Yeah, and that's because I think it's been a while, but I did think of that, right? Because our first home, that one's the one that has the most equity, the most value, right? You know, so and we moved from that home in 2016. So prior to that, we did live in it for 6 years. We're at that window now where it's like at that, you know, you said the 15 years, it's shutting on us a little bit, you know, but you know, It's a good problem to have. You know, we have multiple where, you know, it just what makes the most sense, you know, and it's hard. You know, could we sell all three of them and kind of buy our dream home? We probably could, you know, but is that the smart thing to do? And that's why I keep coming back to you and asking you those things, because it sounds like a great idea, right? We've done some good decision making. You know, now we can pretty much sell and buy our dream home cash. Is it doable? You know, but what's the negative in that? You know, we lose our passive income, you know, we could probably get taxed more. You know, there's a lot of stuff that goes into it. It's not as easy as that.
Yeah, right, right. It's not easy. And I think it's a good way to like kind of sum things up here, is that it's all really complicated. The value we're trying to add is by talking about these things. And, you know, I probably will say this more than once, like, you know, on wrapping up the show, but if for anybody listening who felt like they learned something today, found something valuable, share it with somebody else who's going to have the same, or maybe you've had the conversations with them. Like, we're just going to organically like grow the circle and bring more people in. If there's value in this episode, share it. And like, eventually you'll go back and listen to other episodes when we talk about the VA loan, we talk about budgeting, we talk about emergency savings, talk about real estate investing. And over time, you're just going to be able to build up all that knowledge that guys like Chris and I have spent 20 plus years kind of figuring out by hustling and, you know, by reading my book and following this community and listening to the podcast, you can start to soak up all that knowledge in like a few months, not a few decades, right? So
absolutely.
Chris, yep. It's been absolutely amazing to have you. These are reminding me of some of the best conversations I had in my career when you and I were driving around Southern California in the Govy rental pickup truck and just talking about real estate and what we're going to do. Like, we're just continuing on, you know, it's been 5+ years now of these kind of conversations. So I'm really grateful that you took the time to be here and you shared everything that you did share. And I want to wrap the show up by just giving you the opportunity to, you know, one final piece of advice, words of wisdom that you would like to leave the audience with before we go.
Oh, awesome. Hey, sir, Ted, thank you for having me. I love talking to you. You know, I think I told you all the time, you're one of the mentors, and that's one reason why I say that the Academy was my favorite tour, just because I was surrounded by such influential individuals that, you know, I can just rely on, you know, for the rest of my life when it comes to certain situations. But yeah, to everyone out there, you know, good luck in your service, and, you know, don't ever forget about yourself. You know, I know everyone has a career, and the military is so easy to, you know, make, you know, forcing you to kind of just live, breathe, and eat the Navy, Marine Corps, Army, whatever service you're in, you know, but take the little time to do something for you. What I mean by that is if you have a hobby, right, it's never too late to pick up a book of what you want to do, you know? So, you know, for the past year and a half, you know, I've been reading books where it has built, you know, it's not only a passion, but it has driven me to where I'm at now. So it's like, I'm super excited to start my business that I already have rolling, you know, and I know once I transition, it's going to open, you know? So I took some time for myself, and instead of being forced to read the Commandant's reading list which I do read books about leadership and certain kind of wars and stuff like that. But I took the time for me and I started reading about what I wanted to do when I retire. And that has completely changed my outlook because at the end of the day, you know, you're going to do your time and you're going to have to do something else. The military is not forever, you know, so hold that pride, but don't forget to take care of your future and your families. So, but thank you again for having me and happy birthday, Marines. Semper Fi.
Yeah. Happy birthday and Semper Fi to you too, Chris. Great parting wisdom. And thanks everybody for tuning in this week. We'll be getting this uploaded soon, so you won't be listening to it exactly on the birthday, but every day is a good day to celebrate the Marine Corps birthday.
All right.
Thank you for spending time with me today. I know how busy life is in and around the military, and I don't take your attention or your time for granted. It really means a lot to me that you're here, and that's why I pour so much of myself into each episode to make sure it's worth your time. If today's episode helped you, here's your challenge. Share it with a teammate, battle buddy, spouse, friend, partner, or someone in your family who could use this information. Together, we're growing a stronger, smarter, and wealthier military community, one listener at a time. For more resources, tools, or to sign up for a free coaching session, head over to www.militarywealthcoach.com. And you can also find us on LinkedIn and Facebook by just searching for Military Wealth Coach. Follow us on Instagram and X at MWC112358. Our groundbreaking book, Service and Wealth, 12 Proven Money Habits to Master Military Finance, has just been revised and expanded for 2025, and it's available in paperback and Kindle on Amazon right now. And stay tuned for our upcoming release of our next book, The Ultimate Military Retirement Plan, Your Standard Operating Procedure to Financial Freedom. Hey, until next time, stay financially fit and mission ready.